Hi, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Beverage Chronicles. I'm your host, Gary Monteroso, and we hope everyone is having a good week. Beverage Chronicles, as you know if you've been listening, is a show that presents information and interviews on all kinds of beverages. Beer, wine, cocktails, spirits, coffee, even soda. And later on in this episode, Robin Shreves, our wine reporter, will be with us. I want to start today with an interesting story, I think, that happened quite a few years ago. This was a disastrous beer recall that resulted in 20 fatalities. It goes back a few years. Even some of the weirdest recalls in the U.S. history might not stack up against the Dow beer incident from the 1960s. William Dow was a person who started his brewery in 1861 in Montreal, and for a while it was the top-selling beer in Quebec. But that fame didn't stick around forever, as drinkers were scared off after at least 20 Dow fans lost their lives. These deaths didn't happen all at once. They occurred over a brief period in the mid-1960s in Quebec City. The victims were all very heavy drinkers, downing about a dozen Dow ales daily, which is around 8 quarts. Now, the fatalities were linked to high levels of cobalt sulfate that were added and mixed into the beer. This was done to stabilize the foam and to keep it from disappearing too quickly. Too much of this inorganic compound can throw off a person's citric acid cycle and aerobic cellular respiration. So those who passed away after drinking the beer suffered from cardiomyopathy, which is a heart condition that makes it tough for the heart to pump blood throughout the body. It was believed that the Dow ale had significant amounts of cobalt sulfate, and when you factor in the alarming volume of beer the victims consumed, it could have contributed to their deaths. While cobalt sulfate isn't a common reason for food recalls, it's an additive that can be risky if not used in the right amounts. Many brands strive to bounce back after a major recall, like the one in Quebec City, but Dow had a hard time regaining its former popularity. Adding cobalt sulfate, as I said, to beer was not unusual, and it was added to stabilize the foam. However, Dow breweries added it in higher quantities to tackle issues with foam when poured into dirty glasses. After the deaths, Dow breweries attempted to fix the problem by dumping the remaining tainted ale. Unfortunately for them, this move didn't play out very well, as instead of being seen as a fresh start, consumers remained firm in their dislike for the brand. Despite the inventory issues and the fact that the cobalt sulfate incidents were limited to the Quebec City brewery area, not near the Montreal facility, the public remained understandably cautious about the beer. Instead of making a resurgence, Dow's popularity kept declining, turning it into a budget beer that consumers opted for only when they wanted to save money. After years of being a leading brand and decades of being the last resort for many, Dow Brewery's destiny was determined when the company stopped all production in 1992. Wow, some story, huh? Let's go to a happier note, and here's Robin Shreves.
I'm in Pennsylvania's Brandywine Valley with winemaker Andrew Yingst of Grace Winery, and we're going to talk about sparkling wine. The holidays are coming up, and we think about sparkling wine for toasts, for New Year's Eve, for holiday dinners, but a lot of times you think about champagne and Prosecco, and we're going to talk about why you should be looking closer to home for the sparkling wines that you serve at these special occasions. Andrew, what sparkling wines do you produce at Grace?
Yeah, we have two different sparkling wines. The first one is what we call our cuvée. It is a 100% Pinot Blanc that is carbonated, is light, is crisp, it is fruity, it is easy to drink. And then we have a traditional method sparkling. This is more reminiscent to the champagne style. It is a little bit more of a nutty characteristic, an earthy characteristic, while still providing some of that those apple notes, those citrus notes, stone fruit, and a little bit of a bread flavor that you get with champagne.
So what's the difference between the sparkling wines that you produce here in Pennsylvania and those that come from Champagne in France or the Veneto in Italy where Prosecco is made?
Yeah, for us, you know, it's really fascinating because we're just getting into this. So we have a lot to learn and a long way to go before we really hone in on just the perfect style. What I can say is that we are a little bit warmer. So our fruit can typically be a little bit more like a stone fruit style versus more of the citric characteristic that you may get with champagne. We also add a small portion of Vidal Blanc for acidity purposes with our traditional method. So with that, adds a little unique flavor, a grape variety that's definitely not grown over in Champagne and is very popular here in Pennsylvania.
Why do you think that sparkling wine lovers or anybody who wants to pop open a special bottle and see that big fizz come out, why should they reach for something local as opposed to what they're really used to from Champagne or Prosecco just because that's what everyone says you should be drinking? Why should they be going to their local wineries?
Yeah, I mean, we can speak from a larger socioeconomic thing where you support local and support local agriculture, more honed into your own personal experiences, is you're going to get something unique. You're going to get something that you may not get off the store shelves. You're going to, the one thing that I find fascinating about this area is that we're all in this experimentation phase. So what you're going to get from Grace Winery or some of my friends in the industry that are around us is different. And we're playing around with different fruit. We're playing around with different styles. So with that, you're going to find something really unique that's unique to you, unique to us, unique to the larger wine world. So I definitely recommend trying us out.
Okay. And you said different styles, different grapes. Does that mean lesser quality?
No, definitely not. I mean, the hours I spend on this sparkling wine and the nights I spend looking up at my ceiling half awake trying to hone this in and make sure that it comes out as well as I possibly can attest to that.
Okay, great. Thanks. And just one last question. What is your favorite sparkling wine pairing?
Oh, favorite sparkling wine pairing. The great thing about sparkling is you can really run the gamut with this. You can go something a little heavier. If you want to start right in the morning, you can get an Eggs Benedict would go great with it all the way till dinner where you can get a nice smoked salmon. I would definitely recommend. And honestly, and I'm not sure what I'm going to eat at any restaurant, but I know I want a glass of wine, my first thing to do is go with sparkling because I know it's so versatile and can go with a lot of different options.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
One thing that we like to do here on Beverage Chronicles is present new products to you when we find them and we're impressed by them. And that's the case right now. I came up with recently found a beverage that I really enjoyed. And I want to give some information to you. Now, you guys have known me. You listen to the show. You know I'm a beer drinker. I love beer. I've been drinking beer, my goodness, since I can remember. And even before that. If you look at my book called Artisan Beer, there's a picture of me sipping on foam, age 2. But I also enjoy bourbon, cocktails, occasionally a wine. But again, I found a coffee liqueur that I really enjoyed. Now, when you think of coffee liqueurs, there's one that probably comes to mind. And that would be Kahlua. Now, Kahlua is the world's best-selling coffee liqueur, and it's available around the world. And it's great, and I love it. But I found one that I enjoy quite a bit as well, and it's called State Line Coffee Liqueur, which is made in Wisconsin. And I'm looking at some of the product information about it right now. They use locally roasted coffee, organic grains from Wisconsin's Driftless region, and pure cane sugar. Now, I'm certainly not here to say one is better than another, but I'm, again, trying to present options for you. Kahlua, for example, uses 100% Arabica beans from Veracruz. State Line uses, it's called Kinkin, Brazilian coffee brew, cold brew coffee, I should say, from Madison, Wisconsin. Kahlua is described as sweet, smooth, with hints of vanilla and caramel. State Line was described as rich, velvety, dark chocolate-like, balanced sweetness, and bitterness. A little bit less sweet and more robust and complex than Kahlua, which is probably more dessert-like. Kahlua is made with, as I mentioned, coffee, sugarcane, spirit, vanilla, and caramel. It's rested 8 weeks before bottling. State Line uses neutral grain spirit, cane sugar, and cold brewed coffee. Only 3 ingredients, no additives. State Line, I found, is really good for sipping over ice or in elevated cocktails. And it's small batch, as I mentioned, won several awards. The alcohol content, I know Kahlua is about, I believe, 16 to 20% ABV, depending on the market. And I don't have State Line's numbers, but I would expect it to be similar. And I would say, you know, if you like Kahlua and you want a reliable, sweet, mixable drink, Kahlua's the drink to go to. And if you want to try something a little bolder with a craft-forward liqueur and a gourmet edge, take a look at State Line. Now, State Line, I know you can buy it online at statelinedistillery.com. That is the website, statelinedistillery.com. And I have several recipes using State Line coffee liqueur. If you go to our beveragechronicles.com website and send me a message, I'd be happy to forward some recipes to you as provided to me by State Line. My birthday was on October 26th, and just for the heck of it, I decided to mess around with a cocktail. And again, you guys know that that's not really me. But I went online looking for some recipes, and I found one that looked kind of different and unique. I figured, what the heck, let's try it. And it came out pretty well. I kind of enjoyed it. I'm going to explain to you what I did. I made something called a cherry bourbon lemonade. It had a balance between sweet and tart and also strong. The bourbon paired nicely, and I used Woodford Reserve. The bourbon paired nicely with the lemonade and the cherry. I used some cherry syrup that added that fruity flavor, served it over ice and garnished it with a maraschino cherry and added a little lemon wedge. So it looks good. And you know, they say you eat and drink with your eyes. So I used a rocks or a highball glass. I think that works best for this kind of cocktail. I used a bar spoon to stir the ingredients evenly to make sure I have a well-balanced flavor. And the ice, of course, keeps the drink chilled without excessive dilution. So here's what I did. I used 2 ounces of lemonade, 2 ounces of the Woodford Reserve bourbon. Obviously, you could try any bourbon, your favorite. 1/2 ounce of cherry syrup. And I used maraschino cherries for garnish and a wedge of fresh lemon for garnish. Filled the glass with ice cubes. Again, poured in the 2 ounces of lemonade, the 2 ounces of bourbon, the 1/2 ounce of cherry syrup. Stirred it. Garnished, and it was delicious. It was a home run. I really enjoyed that. So something I'm going to try again. Now, if you want even a fresher taste, you can use homemade lemonade with freshly squeezed lemon juice, and you could also opt for honey or simple syrup. Okay, and that's it for this week's episode of Beverage Chronicles. We really, again, want to thank you for your loyal following of the show. Our listener numbers keep going up. We're reaching close to 200,000 listeners a week. We are so impressed. I want to say hi to our fans, our listeners, especially in the Wisconsin, Michigan area. Thank you so much for listening to us. We've also picked up stations in Tennessee, New York City, just added Wilmington, Delaware. And I'm talking to another station. We may actually expand to another one as well shortly. And we're in the overseas market, 48 countries. Also, the podcast version of Beverage Chronicles exists on all your popular platforms. So, until next week, I am Gary Monteroso. Stay well, everyone. And again, thanks for listening. See you again.